Asmodeus and the Bottler of Gins. "I want to get rid of Asmodeus," said the governor of the Cape to the sheikh. "He's far too much of a problem walking around on the loose." The sheikh stroked his beard and smiled. "Then you are speaking to the right man," he said. "I have bottled many imps and jinns and spirits of the desert in my time, and one more should not be too difficult." The governor was impressed. Everyone knows stories of fishermen opening magic bottles of jinns, but when you think of it, letting the spirits out is the easy part. The tricky bit is getting them in. The governor reached an agreement with the sheikh, who proceeded to have a special bottle made. It was a very thick green glass and was bound with copper plating, with gaps here and there where the glass showed through. The sheikh was not a hard-hearted man. He didn't mind leaving Asmodeus a window or two. Besides, he thought it a good idea to let potential openers of the bottle look inside first so they could see what they were going to get. Once the bottle was ready, the sheikh held its neck in hot water so that it expanded just enough for him to drop a cheap copper ring inside. When the bottle cooled down, the neck contracted to its normal size, and the ring could not be shaken out. The sheikh tested this by walking round and round on the slopes of Devil's Peak, trying to shake the ring out and wailing to himself. Rattle, 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 went the ring in its bottle. The sheikh wailed and rattled all morning and well into the afternoon, until Asmodeus grew fed up at the noise and popped out of the ground to complain. "Right, that's enough," he snarled. "What's all this shake, rattle, and roll racket about then, eh?" The sheikh flung himself down in a basement. "Oh, devil," he began, "I have a bottle that contains a magic ring. If only I could get it out, all my troubles would be over. But look, it will not come out." Asmodeus's bat-winged ears fanned out at the mention of a magic ring. He was thinking about how easily he could run the Cape Hell with the help of a magic ring. No more shoveling for Asmodeus, he was thinking. No more stroking the boilers in the middle of the night. A legion of imps could do it for me. "Give me that," snapped Asmodeus, snatching the bottle. "I'll get it out for you," he added, for the sake of appearance. Asmodeus held the bottle up and peered down its neck. Yes, there was a ring in there, all right. He shook the bottle. No, the ring wouldn't come out. Asmodeus stuck a long finger inside. Scritch, 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 went his talon on the glass. He hooked the ring a few times, but could not manage to pull it up the neck. It kept jamming against the glass and sliding off his claw. There was only one thing for it. "There's only one thing for it," said Asmodeus. "I'm going to fetch it. Once I'm holding it, I can dematerialize it and bring it out again with me. Here, hold the bottle." Asmodeus retreated a few yards up the slope and aligned himself carefully with the bottle's mouth. "I like a bit of a run-up for these things," he confided. In an instant, he had dwindled into a ribbon of steam and shot into the bottle. Once inside, a tiny Asmodeus materialized and with a grunt of effort picked up the ring. As soon as he did this, Asmodeus knew that the ring had no magic in it whatsoever. "There's nothing magic in this bottle," he complained. "Oh, yes, there is," yelled the sheikh, fumbling a cork into the neck and sealing it tightly. Asmodeus was furious when he realized he was trapped. He began to whiz around the bottle, bouncing off the sides and corks so that the sheikh had to crouch down, clutching the bottle to his chest to keep it from shooting out of his grasp altogether. Little electric shocks stung the sheikh's fingers, but he clung on till Asmodeus had calmed down. "What now?" squeaked Asmodeus eventually. His voice buzzed tinnily like an insect through the glass. He wasn't resigned to his fate exactly, but being trapped in a bottle was not a new concept to Asmodeus. Plenty of senior demons at head office had been caught unawares and done a century or two of bottle duty. It was said to teach one self-sufficiency. "You have to stay in there until someone lets you out," said the sheikh. "The rules say that you have to serve them till the end of their days when they do," he added. "Not where I come from," exclaimed Asmodeus in outrage. "It's three wishes and you're free where I come from." "Well, You can negotiate your own terms with the governor, said the sheikh. That's where I'm taking you. He set off down the mountain, and Asmodeus clutched wildly at the smooth sides of the bottle as he swung back and forth. It was quite some time before he was able to speak. That's not a good idea, Asmodeus squeaked. I know the governor. He'll have you killed to keep the secret of his power. It will probably be his first command to me. The sheik slowed down and considered. It did seem likely now that he thought about it, that the governor could prove dangerous. He wouldn't want rumors of his magic bottle getting back to his masters, the Council of 17. The sheik sighed. He'd been promised a lot of money by the governor, but gold was of no use if you weren't alive to spend it. On the whole, I think I'd better chuck you into the sea, he said to Asmodeus. At least if I get rid of you, I might get some cash out of the governor without giving him reason to murder me. Asmodeus was laughing so hard at the thought of anyone hoping to get money out of the governor that it took him a while to register just what the sheik had said about throwing him into the sea. Oi! Wait a minute, he squeaked. But the sheik could move fast when he was holding a bottle demon and he was nearly at the beach. I mean, why not just let me out, howled Asmodeus. I'm no good to you if you're not giving me to the governor, and nobody else is going to buy an unknown demon. You'd tear me to bits if I let you out, panted the sheik. He drew back his arm to throw the bottle into the surging surf. Thanks a lot, clamored Asmodeus sarcastically, scrabbling at the glass. I just saved your life with that warning about the governor. I'm very grateful, the sheik assured him gravely, flinging the bottle as far out as he could. The waves thundered over Asmodeus's bottle, and he curled up and bounced like a rubber ball as it churned around in the surf. Asmodeus had hoped to float, but the copper dragged the bottle down, deeper and deeper as it was sucked beyond the waves. The pressure made Asmodeus's ears ring. Bumps and dongs and grating noises echoed through the bottle. It became darker and colder inside until Asmodeus shivered in inky blackness with his arms clasped around his knees. Every so often, a stray current or a sand shock would jolt him against the cold glass. Asmodeus started whistling to cheer himself up, but the sound dropped flat and dull inside the glass, and soon he stopped. Scrub, 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 rocked the bottle on the sand. Asmodeus had no way of telling whether he had sat there for a day, or a week, or a year, but he was thoroughly bored by the time a net scooped him up. He was lifted through levels of lightning green until the sunlight burst in through the thick glass of the bottle and made him cover his eyes. The harsh cries of the gulls echoed all around and made his ears ache. Yusuf! Yusuf, look what I've found! Cried a fisherman holding the bottle up to the sun. Two tiny yellow eyes stared back at him. Scrunch, 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 went Asmodeus's nails. It's a little red crayfish, said Yusuf, the other fisherman. They like to hide in bottles and shiny things. No, it's not. It's Asmodeus, squeaked Asmodeus. Let me out and I'll grant you a wish. The fishermen were surprised, but they weren't stupid. It says here that you'll have to be my servant forever, said the young fisherman, reading the engraving on the bottle's copper rim. Look, I'll make it three wishes, all right? Now let me out, snarled Asmodeus. That's not what it says on the bottle, insisted the fisherman, and Asmodeus trembled. The laws of magic are unbending, and if the fisherman insisted upon his rights, Asmodeus would be a slave for decades, even forever if the fisherman asked for eternal life. You could make me emperor of the world, gloated the young fisherman. Get real, hooted Asmodeus. If I could make you emperor of the world, do you think I'd be stuck in this bottle? He could give us riches beyond our wildest dreams, said the older fisherman, peering in. Very well, said Asmodeus cunningly, but I suggest you first agree on whose servant I'm going to be. The one who pulls the cork out is my boss, remember. The other one doesn't count. You will be mine, said the young fisherman, picking at the stopper. I found you. But I am the elder, said Yusuf, snatching at the bottle. I can command him more wisely for both our sakes. The fisherman tugged at the bottle while Asmodeus egged them on. Pretty soon they began to fight in earnest, and the boat rocked like a cockle shell. With his bottle spinning on the planks, Asmodeus saw nothing except bare feet and a layer of silvery fish kicking this way and that, but he carried on shouting encouragement first to one and then the other in the hope that the boat would capsize. It was a Malay prahu with outriggers, though, and came nowhere near tipping over. In the end, the two fishermen ran out of strength and glared at each other across the bottle. "You have a bloody nose," said Yusuf. "I'm sorry, brother." "You won't be when you discover your black eye," said the young fisherman. "This bottle has already brought us nothing but grief and violence," said Yusuf, rubbing his eye. "See how that little devil in it sits grinning at our fight? It will only get worse when he is your servant or mine." "Losing a brother is too high a price to pay for anything," agreed the young fisherman, and they picked up the bottle and dropped Asmodeus back overboard. He didn't know whether to laugh at his escape from servitude or weep at being back in the depths. Asmodeus screwed his face against the cold glass. He had landed in a kelp forest this time, so his view was a greenly limited one of rocks and kelp moorings and slowly browsing perlimoon. There was no chance of a net scooping him out of this. "Groan, groan, groan, groan," grated the bottle on the rocks of the ocean bed. A limpet blocked one of Asmodeus's windows. "Get off," he roared, but it sucked on tightly and stared hideously at him for weeks. An octopus tried to open the bottle, and Asmodeus made himself appear as delicious as possible, but the octopus was a tiny one, and its tentacles were too soft to unpick the seal. It liked the bright bottle, though, and was still clutching the copper when it snagged a bait line with its other arms and was hoisted into the air. "We've caught an octopus," said a new set of fishermen, Hollanders this time, who couldn't read the Arabic labeling. "It's caught something, too," they added. "Yes, they like shiny things," said Asmodeus, in as fishermanly a voice as possible. "That's right," agreed the fishermen, each thinking the other had spoken. "Let us use it to bait a lobster pot," suggested Asmodeus, "and see if it works on crayfish." "Good idea," agreed the fisherman, and Asmodeus's bottle was sent back down into the green sea, this time inside a wicker lobster pot, together with a load of fish heads. There were a lot of crayfish around in those days, and it wasn't long before one of them came stalking into the basket. It seized the bottle and tore at its copper binding. "No, no, no, you fool," yelled Asmodeus, capering madly. This end, get the stopper out." He crammed himself into the neck of the bottle and screeched furiously with his nails. The crayfish transferred its attention to the copper around the stopper, and Asmodeus braced his legs and pushed with all of his might. A big crayfish can bend a coin in its jaw and crack open muscles with its pinchers. Asmodeus was beside himself with excitement as the copper started to peel off. But the basket was already jerking upwards. Asmodeus heaved and grunted as the water grew lighter, and he and the crayfish rose towards the swaying leaves of kelp. "Greeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeeee The stopper whanged out of the bottle like a bullet from a gun, and Asmodeus shot through the opening and up into the sky, full-sized at last, in a cloud of steam and shattered basket slats. The fishermen sat quietly as the bits of wicker and broken glass pattered down around them. Their eyes followed Asmodeus, arrowing home to Devil's Peak. "You know," remarked the shaggiest one, mopping a cut which the exploding bottle had made on his cheek, "I'm glad we didn't open that bottle. I think that was Asmodeus." "I wondered what had become of him," said the one with a wicker hoop around his neck. "Did you notice he was holding our crayfish?" asked the helmsman through the ruins of his hat. "Thieving devil," they agreed, baiting another basket. Nothing much had gone wrong in the Cape Hell, Asmodeus was relieved to discover. He cleared a bit of sediment out of the geyser and then went looking for the Sheik. But the Sheik was a sensible man and had long since shipped out on a felucca bound for Zanzibar. So the only real result of Asmodeus's experience was his new habit of muttering to himself and the big crayfish that lived in a tank beside his desk. Nobody could understand why he kept dropping bits of fish into the tank. muttering, "Your slightest wish is to me as the sternest of commands, O master." But they supposed he had his reasons.